Hi, I'm Susan Moore, Community Engagement Manager with IIBA.
And I'm Scott Bennett, Manager of Business Analysis with the International Institute of Business Analysis.
And this is Business Analysis Live.
Susan, we've got a great topic lined up today. We're going to be talking about working across cultures. Hmm. You know, we've talked to a number of people around the globe around this particular topic, and I think this is going to be a great episode because of the guests we've got lined up. Very unique. Why don't you tell everyone about that?
We work in an international association. In fact, Scott and I are in different countries. And so we wanted to introduce you to our account management staff who works, first, they are all over the globe, but they work with our corporates, academics, and endorsed education providers all over the world. So I cannot think of a better group of folks to talk about the challenges and opportunities there are in working across cultures than our account managers. And so we'll have an opportunity to meet all six of them today. I think you're going to love them as much as we do and the insights they bring.
Yeah, and this is really an important topic if you're working across cultures, because you can unknowingly make some mistakes that really, you know, challenge your relationships. So our objective today is to empower you, give you some ideas of what to avoid, how to work across these cultures. So let's bring on our first guests here. They're in our same time zone, North America. Okay. Leah and David.
Yeah, that's right.
Hi, everyone.
Hello there.
Hello.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Yay, so Leah, we're happy to have you.
Leah, you're in Canada, serving Canada and Northeastern U.S., is that right?
Northeastern and Northwestern at this period of time, yes.
Okay, great. And David, tell us about the area that you cover.
Sure, I'd love to, Scott. So I work with our Southeast area of the USA region, and of course our Latin America region. So this includes the Caribbean, Central, and South America, covering several chapters in that region as well.
That's great.
And you know, David and I have something in common, and, you know, we're an international organization, but it just so happens that David and I are located in the same town in North Carolina. So that's kind of fun.
Practically neighbors.
in by Charlotte, North Carolina standards, we are practically neighbors.
Yeah, that's right. So we're going to talk more with David and Leah about their perspectives on working across cultures. But because we have such a diverse group that we work with, we've got different time zones to take into account. So Susan and I spent some time doing some recordings with other account managers. So we're going to play that first so you can hear that conversation and what we're learning from those conversations. And then we'll loop back here with David and Leah so we can talk further about working across cultures.
And before we start that video, we just want to remind you that even though that part is pre-recorded, we're still live and we want your questions today. So while you're hearing from them about their experiences working across cultures, add your comments in, and that is both LinkedIn and YouTube, which is a new thing we're doing today.
That's right.
All right.
We're multi-streaming here.
That's
okay,
right.
So let's jump into the video and we'll enjoy the conversation there.
We want to welcome our first two folks from our corporate sales team. We've got Andy Graysbrook. He is located in Europe, all of Europe. And then also Koketso Chaba. He is in Africa, in the Middle East region, and we affectionately refer to him as KK. So hello, Andy and KK.
Hi, Susan. Hi, Scott.
Yeah. Hey, everyone.
Good to see you.
Thanks for joining us. As we've talked about, working across cultures can be a really challenging thing, and both of you cover large regions. So love to hear your thoughts in terms of how you work with various people from different countries across different cultures. What are those things that you need to pay attention to as an IIBA account manager when you're talking to different people?
Yeah, maybe KK, you can start.
Thanks, Susan. Thanks, Scott. So I think the most important thing, right, for us here in South Africa, one of the things that we refer to is Ubuntu, right? Ubuntu is a term which essentially means I am because you are, right? For me to understand who you are, the first reference point is for me to listen, right? I would have to, obviously, as I am speaking to you and as I'm trying to get to understand you better, the most important thing is for me to listen to you. what it is that you are as a human being before I can try to even, maybe since I'm in the sales field, before I can even try to even sell or even tell you more about who I am and the IBA is all about, ask relevant questions in order to understand you as a human being so that I can even make it even more relatable when I'm actually speaking to you as well. So for me, that is the first reference point, Ubuntu. I am because you are, and for me to understand that, I need to listen to who you are as a human being so that I can communicate with you better.
That's really beautiful. Yeah. What do you think, Andy?
I think that's a really brilliant point and probably the most important starting point with the whole thing. I suppose from my perspective, you know, we very much do human jobs. So we're dealing generally with people all the time in all of our interactions. I think about our job as a job sort of managing and developing relationships with people. And that needs to start from a point of understanding who the person in front of you is and what they're all about. As well as, you know, who they're representing in the organization as well, but it always starts with the person. And I think that a lot of the time, you know, that also means in these multinational kind of coverages that we have, that we have to appreciate that, you know, there might be many different reasons why we shouldn't make assumptions about who is in front of us. You know, I'm based in London, but I'm talking to people in countries all around Europe. There are many similarities, but I think that to assume what those might be can get you into a bit of a difficult space quite quickly, and that it's better to listen first and let them tell you where they're coming from and who they are so that you can respond to things you have in common in response to what they're offering you. Those are the kind of important things for me every day that I'm trying to keep front of mind when talking to people, particularly people I haven't met before.
Yeah.
So it sounds like it's important not to make assumptions that just because you're speaking to someone in a common language that they're similar to what you're celebrating or the things that you value.
Yeah, sure. Certainly not, and also not, hopefully not too much based on appearance, to let people tell you a little bit, because actually, you know, it's the modern world as well. So there's all kinds of assumptions that would be out of date if we are out of date with our thinking and stuff like that. So I think that, again, it's really good to sort of let people offer it up to you. The language point, Scott's a really interesting one as well, I think. I think both Kaketso and I speak more than one language, and you know that can be very useful and can help unlock situations where understanding is a bit more difficult if the other person happens to speak the language you're speaking. Even if it's not their native one, you might have another option to engage. But actually, the understanding of language, I mean, I speak two languages well, but I understand more languages than that from growing up in Europe and stuff.
Okay.
Multi-language area, but sometimes just knowing a few words in German and Spanish, it helps me understand a little bit about those cultures as well. But again, it's always from how that's offered up and how people speak to me, hopefully.
Oh, interesting. And Kaketso, how important is language to you in the work that you do?
Language, as Andy has just stated, language is actually quite very important. I think especially in the sense that if you are multilingual, right, you're able to obviously articulate, you might not be able to articulate yourself as perfectly, but being able to understand first and foremost, right, you can be able to contextualize the conversation from, you know, understanding those basic colloquial terms, for instance, right? And I think the other important thing also is, even with the language barriers, the one most important thing will actually be some, you know, the body language, right? From that, you can also be able to then pick up where, you know, the psyche of the person is, so that you can be able to also obviously get into a point where you are communicating with the person in the right frame of mind as well, because body language can also give a lot of things off over and above, you know, the language. When there is that language barrier, the body language can also sort of help you to, you know, obviously say, okay, pause, I think this person is trying to say this to me as well. What that also teaches you is a bit of patience as well. Okay. Because what it'll do is, with the difference in obviously the language barrier, you can be able to, you know, sort of, you know, hold yourself and try to understand the person. Right? What is this person trying to say to me? Yes, I might not be able to, obviously, you know, speak to them in their home language, but I am able to at least see what they are trying to say to me. That, again, I refer to the essence of Ubuntu, right? The humanness of the person, so that I can be able to communicate better.
Yeah, I think what I'm hearing, just to kind of summarize what you both are saying, is that one of the other traits that's necessary when working across cultures is the openness to learning. So there's the listening, but there's also the openness to learning and understanding without judgment and without assumptions. So yeah, sure. I think this has been really, really interesting. I'm so glad you guys could make time to chat with us.
Yes. Thank you very much. And because we cross cultures, happy holidays, enjoy your winter festivities. We're all celebrating different things around the world at this point, so enjoy the holidays.
And now we've got two more IIBA account managers who are on the other side of the world. We've got Suvarna Velazakul, and we've also got Xavier Traeger. Hey guys, how are you?
Hi Susan. Hi, Susan. Hi, Scott.
Yeah, so, Suvarna, great to have you.
You're covering the India territory, and Xavier, you're covering Asia Pacific. So a very different area of the world than some of your colleagues that work in other areas. Tell us a little bit about, we'll pick up from our last conversation, how body language is important when working across cultures. Suvarna, you want to go first?
Sure. Yes, Scott. So body language, I think a few aspects that immediately come to my mind when we speak of body language is how you greet when you meet somebody, the distance you maintain when you sit with them or when you stand with them, some head nods and hand gestures that we, that we engage in while speaking, and the posture generally. I think these are the immediate points that come to my mind. And depending on the nature of the company that we are interacting with or the enterprise that we're interacting with, some of these things would vary. Like the hand, the shake hand is not, typically in India, it's not done all the time with everybody. There is the namaste hand gesture that all of you would be knowing of, but okay, that's not very common too. I mean, when we in a company setting, that's not very common too. Do the namaste. But things like these would immediately pop into my mind as the important things to keep in mind. I think dress code is also one thing I would think of, and how I dress when I visit a garment organization versus how I dress when I visit a more new age kind of organization would differ. That's...
Wow, interesting. And how do you know and learn what's appropriate in what situation?
I think I would do a little bit of research, but it also comes from experience, because typically India as such, I mean, you would all be knowing that India is very diverse. There are different states, and each state speaks a different language. There's a lot of difference between the North Indian states and the South Indian states, the West and the East Indian states. There's a lot of cultural differences. So growing up, every metropolitan or cosmopolitan city would have a mix of people from different kinds of states. So I think growing up, we would know, essentially have some knowledge about how people behave in different settings. And I think when we visit, when we speak to people, we get an idea of where they come from, and then we know how to engage in different kinds of gestures based on how we interact. So I think there's a foundation that everybody has when they start off.
Wow.
And then usually conversations get a little personal. So I think the first thing we generally try to find out is where the person is from and try to strike a chord with that information. So that also helps in getting that setting right.
Oh, very good.
Xavier, you know, you have got a vast territory in Asia and the Pacific Rim region. So tell us, what are some of the ways, as you're working with folks all over that area, like, how are you how are you figuring out how to work across all of these different cultures?
Well, first of all, I've got a bit of an atypical background. My father was in the oil industry, and I had an expat childhood. So I lived in 8 different countries until I was 14. Then spent 10 years in France. I'm half French from my father, and then now the past 11 years in Australia. My mother's Australian, so I think I've had that kind of fortunate upbringing to be quite adaptable, and have a various repertoire of responses to different cultural situations. But I've used in the business setting very specific models just to get sometimes an idea when I'm not familiar with a specific country or culture. There's a model called the Lewis model. It's a kind of a triangle diagram, and there's gradient levels between cultures or countries that may be more the linear type, multi-active type, and what they call reactive type. And it's all around their warmth. We were talking about body language. There are those that have restrained body language, unrestrained body language, and often the South Asian countries more subtle body language types. There are things that are around results oriented or being a relationship oriented. So the Lewis model, I would recommend to have a look at it. It's always a bit dangerous to make assumptions and draw stereotypes. It's important not to make those mistakes, but there do seem to be some sort of national norms sometimes. So good to keep those under your belt as examples of models. And just generally speaking, be very curious, ask questions around culture, be genuinely, open-minded. And again, be very curious as much as you can.
Yeah.
And I think that's something we heard from Andy and KK, right? Was sort of that idea of don't make assumptions. That can be dangerous. So learning to what people are about. And I like what you said, Savarna, about the personal conversations. So getting to know people. Again, it's stepping away from that idea of making assumptions that can get you into trouble.
Yeah,
that's
and
right.
Sometimes business conversations aren't always about business. They are about connecting with the people that you're working with on a human level, because that really can help to break down some of those barriers when you're working across cultures.
Well, that's right. So I think Savarna had mentioned previously that, as in France, you would refer to somebody, at least in an email in France, dear sir, dear madam, and the surname. So I would refer to you all, Ms. Moore, Mr. Bennett, Ms. Velutikal, but never by your first name. That's my experience 10 years in France. And when I came to Australia, and one of my emails, g'day, Susan, g'day, Scott, g'day, Savarna. G'day,
that's
yes.
I can relate to that too, because I think once India opened up to the Western, companies coming from the West, multinational companies coming from different parts of the world, I think that's when the idea of calling somebody by their first name originated or spread across countries, companies in India. But otherwise, we would either say sir, man, based on their age as well. It's not just, there may be somebody who is not as senior in terms of their hierarchy or title. And hierarchy is a big, point as well when we have conversations. But then if by age they are a little senior, then we would definitely call them by sir or ma'am. So that's also a point that I would keep in mind.
Okay, well, that's wonderful. Well, thank you, Savarna and Xavier, for recording the session with us and sharing some of your insights from where you live in the world. We're coming up to some holiday time, so enjoy your break with your friends and family, and have all the best for the season.
Yeah, thank you both.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Susan. Thank you, Scott.
Have a great day. Thank you.
All right. Well, listen, that was really fun. And you can tell that we were recording during the day and during the night to connect with our friends all over the globe. There were some really interesting things that we were talking about. Leah, maybe what are some of the things that are top of mind for you in thinking about working across cultures?
So many of the points that my colleagues have made, communication, listening, not assuming, these are all relevant points. And I try to add something, you know, I look at a situation and say, how would I want to be treated? What type of way would I want to interact with people? It's identifying with them, and you'd be amazed what you can learn from people in the first 5 minutes of a conversation. It's that interactivity. It's not just a job. It's a, I want to know about you, constantly learning. So I really think that these are key points as well. Do unto others as you would have done to you is a big motto of mine. And at the same time, asking those questions, keeping that curiosity going, and then you can really identify and see that even though you're in a different part of the world, you have so many things in common. I'm first generation Canadian Italian. All of my ancestry is Italian. Learning three languages, interacting with different cultures, growing up in Montreal, all these experiences as well, really build you to have that type of communication skill, I would say. What do you think, Dave?
Yeah. And David, speaking of multiple languages, you also speak multiple languages and use that as part of the work that you do.
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, my teammates have really stated things quite eloquently, and I'm really proud to know them because they've shared and taught me so much. Honestly, I do have to agree a lot with KK's approach. I think there's a lot of similarities in terms of culture. I love how he described Ubuntu in Latin America and in Spanish in general. There's a lot of that involved as well. We're a very dynamic language. And in addition to listening, there's also a lot of a dynamic sense of building rapport in our cultures. So if you think about it, on top of understanding where the other person's coming from, now there's this back and forth, a dance, right? Where we're trying to understand where you're at. What can we do? How can we fill a gap? Because ultimately we're here having conversations, helping individuals and teams fill that gap. Right. And doing that in a different language also involves kind of molding your way of thinking to match the other person. So I think that's one of the benefits of a multilingual approach or having that kind of skill set. You're able to actually bridge more gaps, I'd say a little faster, but in a way, just more deeply. I think once you're more aware of different folks, different cultures, different upbringings, and of course, that's where everything my colleagues have mentioned really come into play. That experience, that back and forth, that application, right? Where we get to find a way to connect with people, because that's essentially what we're trying to do. Whether we're connecting information or people, we are trying to bridge gaps.
Yeah, that's great to sort of understand that. And I'll just put a little bit of a plug in here, self-promotion. IIBA has chapters that operate in different languages. David, you've been involved in one recently. Tell us about that.
Yes, actually, we are growing our chapter community in Latin America, and this involves Spanish-speaking chapters that are making more inclusive approaches to different professionals. There is that language barrier involved. So having like-minded professionals who also speak the same language, for example, in one of our newer chapters, Colombia, has led to huge, and I do mean a huge interest in both corporate and academic communities. So we're having students, our next generation of business analysis professionals, really coming into the fold in a way where they're learning from the potential of business analysis as a profession, right? The scope and future-facing techniques that will make them successful in a wide variety of roles that go very much beyond a business analysis title. So I think it's really exciting. I'm very happy to be a part of it. And it's really mirroring a pattern of growth that we would love to continue having throughout the region as they're working hard, very hard as well. So this is a really nice time to be a Spanish-speaking business analysis professional. I'll just leave that there.
Yeah. And I'll add to that, that meeting people where they are with different languages is also part of what IIBA has been working on for several years now. So we also have multi-language materials. Connor, put a link to those in the in the chat, please, so that we can share the languages that our materials are in, as well as some of our exams have also been translated. And hey, news alert, if you are someone who has language skills, we'll need your help in 2024 because we're expanding our multi-language materials and we're looking for translators from the business analysis community.
Yep, got a response from Connor. He says he's on it.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you, sir.
This is a live show, and we've had some comments come through, some really supportive comments, as well as some questions. So while we've got Leah and David here, why don't we tackle some of those questions, Susan?
Let's do that. And also, it's a reminder, because I see people are really connecting with this topic today, and mm-hmm. we're live, so we're taking your questions. So if you've got a question, put that into our comments. So I think this one was just kind of a me too, a thumbs up for Coquetso's active listening is the best form of respect. And this is absolutely true, right? We often think respect might come in the formality of terms or in different nonverbal body languages, but really one of the ways I think that you show respect is you listen. Yeah. So thank you, Sadish, for that. Then we have another comment here from Suchita. Listening and understanding is the key to collaborate in effective communication. This usually allows you to stay away from assumptions. And I know that was a big part of really the conversation with KK and Andy. I don't know if you guys want to add anything else about avoiding assumptions about folks that you're working with. Any tips? Things we want to share with the audience?
I would say empathy. It's a strange way to look at it, but it's having that empathetic listening skill where you're just wanting to hear more about them, letting them speak rather than being the person to speak. I think that there's a lot that can go really well with just letting people be, let them, you know?
Yeah. What do you think, David?
Honestly, I think this kind of thought process that was just mentioned is why many business analysis teams exist, because we're in an age where we're trying to create business transformative services that essentially take out the assumptions from the picture, because assumptions, as many of us are learning, can get really expensive, especially when we have failed projects or difficulty in implementation, which we might have understood before if only we had a business analysis team to work with it. So kind of understanding and having the pleasure of working with different organizations, with their BA teams, has helped me understand just how important avoiding assumptions are, right? And basic techniques like at the heart of that. So I think that's a really good point. I think individuals and entire teams stand a lot to benefit from remembering that.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, and just a reminder that business analysis skills are life skills. And you know, we often talk about the problems that assumptions can make in our projects. And so being aware that something is an assumption, how you address that, I think is a really important, you know, business analyst, we tend to make even whole sections of a document related to assumptions. So good reminder.
And I'm going to quote you, Susan. You often say on this broadcast that business analysis is a relationship business. And really that's a tone that's resonating in all of our account managers, is really understand the person and have that empathy, as Leah had mentioned.
You know, I feel like sometimes because we are so heads down in our projects, we often forget that we just need to relate to people as who they are, Ubuntu, right? We really need to add more of that. And I know people say, oh my gosh, I've got to socialize. It's not really socializing. It's just meeting people where they are. It's a really important part of the work that we do, and getting to things like consensus or having difficult conversations. I mean, we've had so many guests this year, Scott, who have all said the same thing, right? If you want to have better stakeholder communication, you've got to do a little bit of this relationship work. So, and I think our account managers, that is in the realm where they exist as well. Okay. Sorry, I'm going to get off my soapbox. Let's see. Next question here. Here we go. Here's one from Dwight. He is loving this conversation today. So what is a way you can breach a topic about an individual's background based on their name without sounding insensitive or stereotyping? And I feel like Andy kind of brought this up too in his conversation. What do you guys think? David, maybe you can start this one.
Yeah, that is an awesome question. I happen to be the guy that like happens to guess people's names or spelling right. But honestly, the secret to that is just getting them to talk about it, because who knows their background best? They do. So even something as simple as, hey, tell me a little bit about yourself, or tell me a little bit about your history, can actually start a conversation, right? Going back to that rapport building that fills in some of those blanks for you. So now you don't have to worry about being insensitive or stereotyping. As a matter of fact, now you're helping the person feel a little more comfortable, and you're feeling more comfortable seeing that they're comfortable. And now the conversation is kind of developing more easily. So that's an awesome, awesome question. Just get them to speak about themselves. Get them to tell you a little bit about themselves. If they seem a little bit like hesitant or reticent about the topic, tell them a little bit about yourself first, and then they'll be happy to reciprocate. So just a few ideas.
Yep. What do you think, Leah?
I totally agree with what David is saying there. And at the same time, it's kind of bizarre. A very simplistic way of thinking, I would say, is you didn't name yourself. Somebody else did, right? So tell me about you, the person. You can stereotype many people just based on a name. And really, we're all human. We all have our experiences. It's just tell me about you and where you come from and what you think about this. And then identifying with what they're saying in something about yourself. I have the gift of gab. I make fun of myself on a regular basis. So if I insert my foot in my mouth, I make that clear. This could possibly happen, but I will always respect you. Tell me about you. So
humor. Yeah. Sometimes that can be a good way to start those conversations, with a little bit of humor. All right. So we've got another question here. This one is coming from YouTube today, which we're so excited. Thanks for finding us, All Good, on YouTube. So one of the things that All Good is wondering is, working across different time zones. I'm glad we got this question, with different cultures. How do you do it? How do you manage all these time zones that we're in? Leah, I'll let you start this one.
Well, what's good about IIBA and how we've expanded our group is to have account managers all across the globe. This helps to accommodate that. In times prior, in early days, perhaps we would have had just some account managers working the entire globe, but we've really personalized it to the effect where we have in Australia, we have in the US, we have in South Africa, Europe, you know, that facilitates it. And at the same time, when that is not available, it's basically tell me what time works best for you, and understanding that this can set up a different time in your day.
Yeah, this is, yeah. How about you, David?
Well, I mean, I'm over here thinking about our directors. A term of endearment I have for him is the New York Stock Exchange, because he's got to be available for all of us.
That's right. That's right. Blake is not able to be with us today. We miss you, Blake, if you're watching us. But yeah, he is literally on the clock 24/7.
Yeah. But at my level, what I get to enjoy doing is first getting to know different areas. So I will kind of get to know my time zones in a time zone format. I will ask them, hey, what times work best for you? And it's not just, you know, platitudes or convenience. I'm also noting, okay, folks around this area are available during this time of day. What I essentially try and do is collate that data and try and plan my day around that. So if I know if folks, say, for example, in Brazil, that are 2 hours ahead of me, have a specific day of the week or specific time of the day where it works out better for them, then I meet them halfway, kind of go into a format where I have this time of day set out for them. Or, for example, areas like Mexico. In Western Mexico, we've got folks that are two, almost 3 hours behind me. So the same thing. So as I get more data, I try and kind of block out different times so that I can focus on folks there as well. And it helps a lot because then your brain is kind of staying on one topic in one group, as well as one language, which I personally benefit from. So that's probably one of the easiest ways to kind of manage the time. Just block out areas depending on what feedback you're getting from those areas themselves.
Yeah, one thing that I've done in my calendar, because we do work across time zones, all staff, is I've got Mountain and Pacific time set up in my calendar. So my own local time zone, Eastern, I can see those other two. And then when I'm booking a meeting with someone, I recognize, oh, they're in whatever time, and it shows me real time what time zone it is for them. So you might have a tool that can help with a little bit of that as well.
Yeah, my tool is World Time Buddy. So we're not getting paid for that, but it's an excellent tool because you can line up different time zones. But I think much like so what I'm hearing you guys say is much like how we need to be aware of the individual, kind of have a relationship with them. We also need to kind of have a relationship with the time zones that we work in. And that means having an awareness of them, putting them in the front of our mind so that we can understand, what time is it to so-and-so that I'm working with. I think that just makes our service to them much more personal when we can be thinking about their time zone. It's a way that we show respect.
And even just asking, we come across a lot of people that we're dealing with them via telephone, but also via email. And sometimes that scheduling tool, this is how my calendar is set up. It's Eastern time. Tell me about you. What are you set up as? Asking those questions right off the bat, you get to be able to avoid that kind of obstacle if you're not paying that attention.
I'm thinking about all of what's been said here, and the thing that I'm left with is that we have to make effort to be more transparent about a lot of things in order to work across cultures, whether it's understanding, formality, understanding the person, understanding the area they're from, the time zone they're in, where we can, maybe assume some things. We really have to make an effort to say those things out loud. Use your question skills, your interview skills in order to do that.
100%.
Yeah. So I think that's really what maybe working across cultures is all about. So I think that's it. We're kind of at the end of our questions for today. I don't know if there's anything else, any wrap up you want to do, Scott?
Well, we do have a really interesting business analysis live session, a little self-promotion for next time. Susan will tell you about that in a minute. But I want to say happy holidays to Leah and David. Thank you for joining us and sharing your experience in what you do. It's definitely, I think, helpful just based on the comments that we're seeing live right now. So thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, thanks, Leah.
Thank you all for having us.
Yeah, so great to have you. Thanks for being with us today. And let me tell you what we're going to talk about the next time. It'll be in the new year, January 3rd. We're going to talk about the best of business analysis live. So if you're just finding us for the first time on YouTube, we've been doing this for a while. This one will be a great one you'll want to tune in to see what we've been talking about. And hey, you know that thing they say where what happens in Las Vegas stays in Vegas? Well, we've got a special video from Las Vegas that we're going to show you. You won't believe it. So we can't wait to see you then. 2 weeks from today, happy holidays. This is the end of our live session, but if you've got questions, you can send us an email at live@iiba.org or leave us a voice message and we'll answer your question at one of our upcoming broadcasts. Join us.